Ocean FM's Agri Week with John Lynch.
Hello and welcome along to Agri Week. Coming up on the programme this week, sheep farmers and farm officials strongly criticise the importation of lamb meat by Irish Country Meats. They claim this is a clear attempt to undermine the prices that sheep farmers are currently securing. Leitrim County Council are introducing DNA testing this week to identify dog owners who neglect to pick up dog waste deposited by their pets on streets, parks, walking trails and housing estates. This technology will also be used to identify dogs who are guilty of livestock attacks. We'll have more on this story a little bit later on. And the IFA say there are many essential workers who need to secure a Category B or W license in order to deliver essential services on farms during the summer as part of employment with agricultural contractors. We'll hear more on that towards the end of the show. So plenty to come, and we do hope that you can stay with us.
Ocean FM's Agri Week with John Lynch.
Well, to get us underway this week, we're going to hear how sheep farmers and farm officials are strongly criticising the importation of lamb meat by Irish Country Meats. The farming groups and indeed individual farmers have come out and said that this is a clear attempt to undermine the prices that sheep farmers are able to secure. At the centre of the storm is a delivery of a consignment of 1,100 lamb carcasses or 23 tonnes of sheep meat, which left Great Britain over the weekend and arrived at an ICM facility in Wexford on Monday morning. Well, local IFA official and sheep farmer Kevin Comiskey says farmers are outraged that factories in the same week where they attempted to pull down the price of lambs and hoggets are importing lambs to fill orders. Speaking to the Agri Week programme here on Ocean FM, Mr. Comiskey confirmed that they have sought an urgent meeting with ICM.
There's a lot of anger out there including myself when I seen it last night coming up on social media. Very annoyed, and the sheep committee, we got together talking on phones and different things, and we got together and we didn't rest until we verified that it was coming in. We didn't know where it was coming or what was, we knew what was coming, but we verified through the night. A lot of us didn't sleep too much, but we got it verified, and the sheep committee. So it's a stunt by the meat factories. They're always good at this, to try and, when the thing is, the lamb trade is fairly good, they want to try and depress the trade and get back down, making more money, obviously, for themselves. And this is what the tactics they're going to now, importing lamb into a country that's producing the finest of lamb.
If we can, and I know it's a purely maybe speculation to a large degree, but how much is this likely to impact the prices that farmers here will be able to get for lamb going forward with such a large quantity now coming in and flooding the markets?
Well, I suppose the typical example, John, was talking to me the other night, and 8:30 he was able to get last Sunday for spring lambs, and he was down to 7.50 today. So that's 80 cents in a week. That's a fairly drastic drop, and I wouldn't like to see that trend continuing, because a few 80 cents and we're back down way below cost of production again. So that's what they were at. Hoggets was back, I think, as far as maybe 7.20, 7.30, fellas was telling me today as well. So that wasn't good, and basically that's what they're at. It's a stunt to keep depress the price and say to farmers, look, we have it. And especially in the time of Ramadan, when there's good buying and everything out there. But as I said, it's a disaster to see. But you could expect that else from the likes of the factories when they're at that.
Just to try and bring some balance to the interview and play devil's advocate here for a moment, ICM, I presume, will say it's all about a matter of supply and demand. They feel, for the reasons that you just mentioned, that there's a large demand for lamb at the moment, and they'll also point to the fact that they're not breaking any laws.
Well, they will indeed probably point to that as well, but why do they have to bring it into Ireland if this lamb is going back out and going to France? It's purely, I think, to suppress or depress the trade in England, or the price in England and in Ireland. If they wanted to go somewhere with it, what are they going to do with it, or where are they going? I feel there's certainly no need to bring it in here into this country when, as I said, we're producing plenty of it. They will make the argument, of course, supply and demand, and of course they're very good at that, and they'll make plenty of arguments. But anybody, you know, standing on the ground and looking around the fields of Ireland and say, you know, why is there 1,100 lambs coming in a container when we're breeding the best of them? It just doesn't make sense.
Where to from here now, Kevin? Because we've had 1,100 carcasses come in this morning into a factory in County Wexford. What can the IFA do to try and ensure that it stays at 1,100 and there aren't more carcasses imported in again next weekend ahead of the bank holiday weekend?
Well, that's it. We'll certainly not be found wanting in putting pressure on them. We've asked for a meeting with ICM, with Camolin there, to highlight the aggression that we have against this coming in. And, of course, we'll be on to the department as well and the minister to say to him, you know, look, at the number was up. The number of that registered container was up on Facebook last night and was up all over Twitter and different social media. There has to be a paper trail for that container of lamb. You know, where was it going? Were they able to trace it through the port where it came in at 5 to 6 this morning? All that.
And needless to say, from being on the Sheep Committee, you would have gauged the reaction of a number of farmers today. Sheep farmers, not alone up and down the length and breadth of the country, but predominantly the main number you'd have been talking to would be based here in the Northwest. And you know something, it has to be a hammer blow when you see all that they've gone through in recent times and now see an opportunity like this where the market was finally going well and all of a sudden you see the market swamped with products being imported from overseas.
That's exactly the way it is, and look at as I said, the factories is good at doing this because they're out there and they know when the lamb is starting to come, a bit more lamb will be coming on the streams for sale now and that, and this is the sums that they're trying to do, and there's a lot of anger out there, and even when on the, you know, discussion groups there that's on social media and see the comments that are coming in, it's certainly a lot of anger is shown from all sectors.
Ocean FM's Agri Week, number one in the Northwest for farming matters.
On to our next item now, and Leitrim County Council from the 1st of May are introducing DNA testing to identify dog owners who neglect to pick up dog waste deposited by dogs on streets, parks, walking trails and housing estates. How is it going to work, I hear you say? Well, the Leitrim Animal Warden will take samples of the dog waste in areas at high level of dog fouling, and using DNA, they'll match the samples with saliva samples taken from the cheeks of dogs who are in those particular areas. Now, dog owners will be asked to cooperate with the warden in allowing a sample to be taken. Owners who fail to comply are going to be issued with a statutory notice under the Animal Health and Welfare Act, which compels the owner to allow a saliva sample to be taken. Now, if you fail to comply with the notice, that is not allowing a sample to be taken, there'll be a fine or prosecution. It's hoped that this technology will also be used to identify dogs found guilty of attacking livestock. Sounds interesting. Let's find out the story behind the proposal, and we'll hear now from James Madden, who's the Leitrim County Council Veterinary Officer.
The idea is that we want to protect our beautiful greenways and blueways in Leitrim, with many great walking trails in Leitrim, and we want to protect them from dog fouling. We also have an issue around particular housing estates in the county, and we want to protect the residents from that. So we've come up with this, I suppose, unique way of doing it. We're harnessing existing technology that's out there. It's DNA technology. It's widely used in the United States. I believe we're the first local authority to use it here in Ireland. It involves taking a sample from the dog waste, sending it to the lab in the US. We mix it with a particular reagent and we send it to the lab in the US, and also taking samples from dogs and trying to get matching samples between the dog waste and the dogs.
When it comes to taking the sample from the dogs, because some owners here might have concerns for two reasons. Some obviously won't want to give you a sample from their dog because it might incriminate them in the future, but others might feel that this could be painful on dogs. So tell me how you're going to do this.
Okay, well, the sample from the dog is very simple and straightforward to take, John. It's a swab, it's called a buccal swab. It's from inside the inner cheek in the dog. You take a little swab of saliva with like a cotton bud, and that's put in a particular reagent which stabilises it, and then we mail that off to the lab in the US. Absolutely painless for the dog. It's done in literally in seconds. A simple little swab inside his cheek. The second part of your question then, some owners may be resistant to having a sample taken because they may feel it may incriminate them. For those owners who cooperate and allow us to take a sample, there will be no fine for the first offence. We're simply going to issue them with a warning letter for the first offence, but the second offence that thereafter, there will be fines. In relation to those dog owners who refuse to give a sample at all, we will issue a statutory notice under a piece of legislation called the Animal Health and Welfare Act, which allows us to take a sample from any animal where there's a risk of disease. And we believe in these instances that there is a risk of disease. And under that notice, they will be legally compelled to allow us to take a sample.
Another question that springs to mind here, James, as well, is there will be a lot of people now, maybe the restrictions beginning to ease, will be moving from one county to another and maybe taking in some exercises with dogs in various blue ways, green ways, etc. If they are found guilty, maybe of dog fouling in Leitrim, but are living in a neighbouring county, can they be prosecuted?
Well, that could be a little bit more difficult. I'll agree with that because obviously we have to find them. We may have to depend on CCTV or other ways of finding those or recording license plate numbers. But we intend to find as many perpetrators as we can, get the samples and issue the fines if necessary. We'll take it as it comes. I accept that some cases may be more difficult than others, but we will start. And we think that even the fact of us taking those samples will have a deterrent effect on people allowing dog fouling to occur.
Obviously, there'll be a cost factor as well in sending over samples to the US to get analysed in order to track down the dog. So will you be hoping, or will the council be hoping, that this particular initiative, maybe from revenue raised from fines, will be able to support itself?
Well, we do eventually, and we accept that there will be an initial cost, John. The sample from the dog is going to cost €55 plus postage, €55 to have the analysis carried out, and the waste sample is going to cost €80. There's, because of the kit, the particular kit that's required, which is €15 for the waste sample, it's a bit more expensive. But there will be a cost involved, certainly. We're hoping to recoup that cost from fines and from fees. Now, if we do have to resort to the courts, or we have to resort to statutory notices to get those samples from dogs, in those cases, we will be issuing fines, or we will be going to court. And in that case, we will be seeking our costs as well as whatever fine the courts impose. We will be seeking our costs in those cases.
Automatically, you think of green ways, blue ways, but equally so around housing estates. It's a very, very serious problem there with major health implications. Say, for instance, children out playing in the summer and they come in contact with dog fouling.
Certainly is, yeah. And there's two issues here, John. There's the person who takes their dog out and deliberately allows that dog to do its business on the green in the housing estate and do that on a consistent basis. And the neighbours know who they are. We know who they are. They haven't been caught. But using this technology, they will be caught because we can get the evidence and we can come after them. So that type of offender will be subject to this type of traceability. Then other than that, there are stray dogs. People who have dogs out straying. Now, every stray dog which we take into our shelter, we are going to take the DNA samples from those stray dogs when they come into our shelter, and if they're responsible for dog fouling in their area, so we'll be building up our database in Leitrim from stray dogs, from those owners who cooperate, and from the owners where we have to issue the statutory notices. So over time, we'll be building up a database of dogs.
What about dogs that mightn't necessarily have a licence?
Even if they don't have a license, if they have a microchip and we can find who the owner is, or if we can, even if there's no microchip or license and we can prove ownership, we can take a case in those cases.
Okay, and the company, though, obviously will be conducting the tests, as we mentioned, are based in the USA, and they've got a very appropriate name for this particular procedure as well.
They have indeed, John, yes. We all love this name. They're called Pooprints.
Okay.
P-O-O-P-R-I-N-T-S. It's obviously on dog poo and then fingerprinting or DNA technology, poo print.
We're going to have to see how successful it will be. But I presume there's a lot of research gone into this, James, and you'll be fairly confident of getting convictions if and when cases inevitably will go to court.
We've put a lot of work into this, John. We're pioneers in this, but we've been pioneers in other areas in relation to dogs. As you may know, 20 years ago, Leitrim was the first county to introduce a no-kill policy. Every single local authority were putting down huge numbers of dogs, and nationally we were putting down 16,000 dogs. Leitrim introduced a no-kill policy 20 years ago, and since then we've been putting down very, very low numbers, like 2 or 3 dogs per year, as opposed to previous to that, maybe 200 or 300. Every local authority is now doing the same. Everyone is rehoming their dogs. It's become a popular thing to do. This may seem a little bit like a pioneering initiative, but I think in years to come, in 5 years or 10 years, I think it'll be routinely used. It may not be an absolute solution to dog fouling, but I think it will be a very useful tool in our toolkit against dog fouling.
Finally, the whole initiative goes live at the beginning of May.
Yeah, goes live on the 1st of May. That's our plan, yeah. So after that, we'll be taking samples at various locations around the county, and we'll be asking dog owners to cooperate with us for taking samples, and we'll be sampling all stray dogs.
It's something as well that you're hoping to expand to other areas of agriculture.
We are. For example, livestock attacks. We're obtaining a specific kit that we can take DNA samples from a wound, say in a sheep or any animal that's been attacked by a dog, and we'll get some saliva from that wound on the swab, and then we can link that to the dog who carried out the attack. So if we suspect a particular dog may or may not have carried out that attack, we can take a DNA sample from that dog, match it with the wound from the animal, and that gives us a good match. And just to say, John, this technology is very, very accurate. The chances of an error occurring is 1 in 250 billion. This is very accurate genomic sequencing, and it pinpoints the dog with absolute accuracy.
Ocean FM's Agri Week, where farmers across the Northwest have their say.
And finally for this week, farm officials in the Northwest are urging the Minister for Transport to allow consideration for candidates to take their driver theory tests remotely. The IFA said that many are essential workers who need to secure a Category B and or W driver's licence in order to deliver essential services on farms during the summer. Now that's of course part of their employment contracts with agricultural contractors. The government decided recently not to classify the driver theory test as an essential service. Now, this is despite a proctor remote testing option allowing driving theory tests for heavy goods vehicles to be carried out for other candidates. The IFA are calling for candidates applying for other driver license categories such as cars and tractors to be allowed to sit these tests remotely. The chairperson of the IFA in Sligo, Kathleen Henry, says that a number of agricultural services are included in the government's list of essential services at level 5, and that these are essential workers and should therefore be allowed to complete their essential driving training in order to take their theory tests.
Driver theory tests aren't provided. It's going to limit the amount of drivers that's there for agricultural contractors to go about their business, and that will impact, of course, on the farmers, because we won't be able to save our fodder. There'll be nobody there to do the silage or do any of that sort of stuff. And they are very important. Like, going back to the original thing of COVID, farmers were seen as frontline people. And I suppose to us agricultural contractors and their drivers are frontline people, because we need them to go out, whether it's to do fertilizer or to do the silage or put out slurry. They're very, very essential, because it's also very important to have it animal welfare-wise to make sure that we have our crops in for them when the winter comes, when there's a scarcity of grass and they're in the sheds.
And, of course, when it comes into the summertime of the year and there's hay, silage to be saved as well, it's a valuable source of summer work for a lot of students.
Yes, very much so. Like, it works both ways. They're very valuable to the drivers. They're very valuable to, I suppose, the wide farming community and the agricultural driver, because they provide the labour that does this work. But at the same time, these students are being given an opportunity to earn some money, I suppose, if they're away in college or if they're away doing other stuff during the normal terms in school or college, then they have some money for when they're there, and like, it gives them a great boost in their income that might not otherwise be available. And I suppose particularly in COVID times, the fact that there may not be as much employment available to students in rural areas due to closures of restaurants or wherever they might get work. So this summer, I suppose, is even more critical in the sense that it'll put money into their pockets that they otherwise not might be able to get.
Do you find it frustrating that there's a similar model in play already for theory tests when it comes to those looking to drive heavy goods vehicles?
Yes, I do, because I cannot see how it can be applied to one section of society and not to the other section of society. I'm not trying to degrade the importance it is for heavy goods vehicle drivers, but it's also very important for agricultural contractors and farmers, and indeed some farm children that will be at home in the holidays that helps out on the farms may be ruled out as well by not being able to get their driver's license to help when they come home during the summer.
And predominantly now young people would be the main ones that would be looking for licences in these grades. And in the past, they would have obviously conducted a lot of their studies online. They'd have been engaged in remote learning over the last 13 months or so with COVID-19 restrictions. So they would be comfortable and indeed very technically savvy in a position where they would have to sit these tests on a rural basis.
Very much so. Like, they would have a great advantage in relation to how to do it, be they on like students that is completing their leaving cert, or be it students that has been in college, as you said, for the last year. They would have the, I suppose, more even knowledge than some of the rest of the people that might be needing to set theory tests, because they might not be as up to date with all the online platforms that is available at the minute.
And obviously it's only a theory test that you're talking about here. It's important that people know the rules of the road before they go out and take in practical lessons. But you feel, I presume, Kathleen, that this could be conducted in a safe manner and that anybody that passes the test then could move on to the next level?
Yes, because as far as I know, even the theory test, when you go in, you have to do it in a room anyways, and it's done online. So I cannot see the difference of doing it from home, doing it remotely. Like, students are able to do other studies from home, so there should be no difference in doing that. And then they will have to go and do their formal driving test afterwards. It's thought that they're going to be skipping out and doing their formal driving test in anyways, but we need to get across this barrier to get them to the fact that they can actually do their physical driving test.
The government seem to be contradicting themselves here in some ways by not having this mechanism in place for those that are engaged in agricultural activity. On one hand, they're saying, well, you can't take tests, therefore you can't drive these vehicles. But on the other hand, it's clearly stated in the COVID-19 regulations and restrictions that agricultural workers are essential workers and therefore should have certain clearances to go with these titles.
Yes. Absolutely. Like I said that earlier, the ward is frontline staff or frontline people. So these are most important to the farming community. So there should be a derogation put in place to allow them to undertake their exams, because otherwise, come the back end of the year, there may be no fodder, there may be no silage, there may be no crops done without these drivers providing their labour to the agricultural contractors. So there's very much needs to be an insight or a review taken of this process in relation to this particular segment of society.
Would you fear that if there's a shortage of agricultural workers, obviously that's going to drive the cost of hiring these people up? It's also going to have major issues when it comes to supply and demand. And let's face it, when it comes to saving silage, when it comes maybe to saving hay more so, there's a relatively short window of opportunity, depending on the weather or whatever. And the last thing you want is a shortage of these skilled workers.
Yes, very much so. Like, it will probably increase the price of hiring them. But as well as that, like, the people have to probably be working in a much more compacted time, in the sense, as you said, like, we cannot guarantee what the weather is going to be like. So naturally, if there's less drivers there available, everybody is going to have to be trying to get more stuff done in that period to save the crops. Otherwise, they won't be there to save hay, particularly in sunshine, or it could lead into it being bad quality fodder because of the fact that it's not saved at the right time, and because the agricultural contractors and their drivers won't be able to get to the farmer to get it done before the weather changes.
And that's it from this week's edition of Agri Week. Thanks a million for listening. Enjoy the bank holiday weekend, and we'll talk to you again, God willing, next week.